So we are really on the downslope of the book of Ecclesiastes, one of my favorite books, so that's why we're doing it. We're in chapter 10. Chapter 10 is the fool. The entire chapter is about the fool. So Solomon likes to talk about fools. He uses the word fool or folly 128 times in his writing. And Solomon would simply say this, don't be a fool. It won't work out. And chapter 10 is just, don't be a fool. It doesn't work out. And the great thing about this chapter is you can learn from good examples, and I appreciate that. But you can also learn from bad examples. And often I think we remember the bad example better. Whatever is in our broken heads, we remember bad things better. So I have a bad example that has stuck in my head as a parent for probably 23 years now. It happened many years ago down in Monterey, California. My father-in-law's family is from Monterey. So when my two older girls were really small, like 5, 4, 3, 2 years old, we would go down to Monterey once or twice a year and visit the grandparents and enjoy Monterey. It's beautiful. And in Monterey, there is a park. It's one of the coolest parks in the world. It's called Dennis the Menace Park. It's so good. Like, it's the coolest park. So we'd always go to Dennis the Menace Park. So we go there. It's a perfect day in Monterey, 75 degrees, no clouds, sunny, light breeze. Park is packed, just having a great time. When this person pulls up, and they kind of came in fast for a park, pretty aggressive. You kind of hear the tires. So kind of everybody like notices it. Car stops. It just pukes out 5 kids. They just barfs them out. They go running off. And then a mom pops out and she's kind of bent. You can just kind of see she's not happy. We learn later that she'd been in a car with those 5 kids for an hour. So I can understand it. I've been in a car with 5 kids for an hour and wanted to get out at 70 miles per hour. So I understood a little bit of what is going to happen next. So one of her kids, probably a 10-year-old girl, goes running off and runs towards the slide. And it's one of those really cool long slides that are multiple channels. And this girl, instead of going up the stairs and down the slide, she decides she's going to run up the slide. And there's a kid, like there's a line of kids trying to go down the slide. So a kid stopped halfway down and she's still just going up. The mom notices this from across the park and she starts to yell, "What are you doing? Get off that slide right now. I don't care that we drove an hour here. We'll get right back in the car and go home." And she's making a beeline for this 10-year-old girl. Like the whole park just stops. Like everyone just goes, "Err!" Like the kids on the swings were frozen. They're like watching, like, what just happened? So this mom just beelines, grabs this 10-year-old's arm off that slide, just like jerks her off. And I knew what was going to happen next. And I didn't want to be a witness because it is California and I might be called to testify. So I just looked away. I'm like, okay. And she just railed on that girl. And the girl, really for the rest of the time that we were there, just shamed. Good example or bad example? Bad example. I said, note to self, don't yell at your children in the park. Wait till you're in the car. There's plenty of time then. You got an hour? Wait till that. So we remember bad examples. They stick in our heads. We remember them. And in chapter 10, Solomon's going to say, these are fools. Don't be a fool. He does give on a couple of them the antidote. And then on the other two, I'll add my own antidote. So we'll look at the fool. And then we'll try to look at, here's how you can prevent being a fool. Chapter 10, verse 1, the fool. Dead flies make the perfumer's ointment give off a stench. So a little folly outweighs wisdom and honor. A wise man's heart inclines him to the right, but a fool's heart to the left. If that isn't the Republican's verse right there, you're just like, bro, golly, why isn't that on every slogan? Like... Even when the fool walks on the road, he lacks sense, and he says to everyone that he is a fool. Foolish stench is what I call this. So really, if you actually go back a verse to verse 18 of chapter 9 and verse 1 of chapter 10, it's saying the same thing. One foolish event can ruin a life. So an ointment 3,000 years ago was actually an investment. You would buy it. It was very valuable. You could sell it. It's always going to maintain its value. We have expensive creams today. Like I just looked up, what's the most expensive cream? Well, JK7 Rejuvenating Cream is $2,000 an ounce. The good news is it has free shipping, so that'll help. Now imagine you bought some JK7 Rejuvenating Cream, you get it at $2,000 an ounce, and you open it up and there's a maggot in it. What would you think? That's ruined. What would you remember? Would you remember the cream or the maggot? You can remember the one maggot in that very expensive cream. That's what happens. We remember the one maggot. My senior year at OSU, one of my roommates, Johnny Garrett, was the offensive tackle for the OSU Beavers. And they would have about 50 offensive plays a game. And the only time we'd ever hear Johnny Garrett's name was not the 49 times he blocked really well. It was the one time holding number 72, Johnny Garrett, 10-yard penalty. The one mistake, 49 great plays, one mistake. That's what you hear. This is what Solomon is saying. If you're old, you remember a guy named by the name of Richard Nixon? What do you remember about Richard Nixon? Watergate. I am not a crook. Right? Doesn't matter. Everything else he did well, we remember Watergate. If you're in the Christian circles, remember a guy named Jimmy Swaggart? What do we remember about Jimmy Swaggart? The tears and the prostitute. More currently, Will Smith. What do we remember about Will Smith now? When he slapped Chris Rock. Right? Not all the great movies he made, and he made some fantastic movies. We remember, bro, lost it and slapped Chris Rock. This is what Solomon is saying. One small, stupid mistake can define your life and ruin it. And it always starts out small. It's the way the enemy works. Let's just get you a little fly, that's it. Just a little flirt, a little look, a little padding of the expensive. It's not a big deal. A little lying on the taxes, a little experimenting around with that. It's always a little compromise. It's a little fly, that's it. And what's the big deal? Look out. That's the way the enemy works, you know what? He doesn't come at us full front, not when you're a believer. I'm not going to walk out of Pet Mart today buying some cat food. I'm not going to walk out and some guy's going to have a trench coat and be like, bro, you want some black tar heroin? And I'm not going to be like, well, let me think about that. Pro con this. Cons, probably going to lose my family, get fired by the elders, lose all my money, go bankrupt, end up homeless, it's unhealthy, I might even die. But pros, might be an interesting hour. No, I mean, bro, I don't do that. That's stupid. You need Jesus. Knock it off. Because that's not how the attack happens. It's just a little fly. Just a little compromise. Just a little movement in the wrong way. That's how he attacks. The fool. That's one foolish thing define his life. And then Solomon just says, verses 2 and 3, they advertise their smell, right? He walks on the road, you can tell. He's skipping down Interstate 5. Like, what is that guy doing right now? Why is he doing that? They show up to date your daughter with a t-shirt that says, beer, it's not for breakfast anymore. You're like, hey, no, you're not touching. You're not coming close to my house. Leave right now. There's just this advertisement that they're idiots. They advertise everywhere they go. It's not sin necessarily what they're doing, but it's foolish. Driven by entertainment, driven by just no work ethic, not walking things out well, that's what they do. So they have a foolish stance. Number two, they have foolish idols. Verse 5, I gotta tease this out, kind of bring it forward 3,000 years. There's an evil that I've seen under the sun. As it were an error proceeding from the ruler. Folly is set on many high places and the rich sit in low place. I have seen slaves on horses and princes walking on the ground like slaves. It would take a lot to try to unpack, like, it's so cultural. But let me try to modernize it like this. Like, if you went back 100 years in America, who are the people that we looked up to? Who are the idols that we had? Who are the people they said, that's what we should be ascribing to? We admired doctors and scientists and teachers and professors and presidents and statesmen. That's what we admired. Today, 2026, who do we admire now? Yeah, influencers like Clavicular, who takes a hammer and smashes his face and takes meth to look better. I think, why do we give fools the time of day? And if young people are admiring this dude right now, where are they gonna be in 5 years? They're called influencers for a reason. Don't give them the time of day. They're fools. Be careful, foolish idols, because they'll influence you. You'll end up acting like them, foolish. And verse 8, foolish work. He who digs a pit will fall into it. A serpent will bite him who breaks through a wall. He who quarries stone is hurt by them. And he who splits logs is endangered by them. If the iron is blunt and one does not sharpen the edge, he must use more strength, but wisdom helps one to succeed. If the serpent bites before it's charmed, there is no advantage to the charmer. Foolish work. Sorry if you hired this guy. He gets hurt, falls into the own pit that he dug, gets busted by the rocks that he's quarrying, cuts a tree, but doesn't have a sharp axe, so it splinters barber chairs and kills him. He's a fool. When I was typing this, I was actually looking at my hands, and I have a messed up finger on this hand and a messed up thumb on this hand, and I'm like, am I a fool? Because I have kind of busted up hands as well. Fools. My favorite is verse 11. If the serpent bites before it's charmed, there's no advantage to the charmer. I watched this happen. So the first time I went to India, there was a massive tsunami over there, so I organized this trip to kind of go over and help out with some septic systems that got messed up and some wells that got messed up. And so just kind of, hey, let's go try this. Took about 12 of us. Amazing time. Jim Wright was with us. Super fun. So we go over there, and they have this pattern with this ministry. It's called Body of Christ Ministries, where we would go into a little village. The 12 of us would do a skit, just the stupidest, silliest skit in the world. It just got people to come out and be like, what are these guys doing? And then you would share the gospel with them. So that was it. You'd go to like 5 or 6 villages every single day, hour trip between each village, and you'd end late at night. So this particular day, we ended at this village. It was called the Snake Village. Because these guys, their job was to go catch king cobras that like got into somebody's house or around and causing trouble. So they literally called the Snake Village. So we do our thing, skit, share the gospel. It is 11:30 at night. And this particular village, really tight little village square, kind of just, it's as primitive as you can get. Like little grass huts, just very, very small. So maybe 250 people live in the whole village. So the village square was maybe like 50 by 50, 50 by 70, small. One tiny little light, like very dark, just kind of like the hair on the back of your neck is standing up. So get down sharing the gospel. Israel, our guide, brings this guy over there. Hey, this guy wanted to meet you. So I shake his hand and I notice on his hand, his number 3 ring finger was really messed up. It was shorter than it was supposed to be. And then the bone was actually sticking up through the skin and it was sharpened like a pencil. I'm like, that's not normal. So I said, what happened to this guy's hands? So they had this conversation in Tamil. And Israel says, oh, he got bit by a king cobra right on the end of his finger. And he knew that if he didn't cut off his finger, he's going to die. So he just took his knife and cut off his finger. And that's just what happened. I'm like, ouch. And then this guy says something to Israel. And Israel says, he's got a king cobra. Do you want to see it? I said, no. Oh, no. No, I choose life. No, uh-uh. It's like a, I don't know, quarter mile, half mile walk out to the cars. I don't want to have a king cobra in my head walking in the dark. No, I don't want to see it. Well, he apparently didn't care. So he goes, leaves. A minute later, he comes back with this burlap sack. And you can see like the size of that king cobra inside of that burlap sack. It was massive. It was like the size of my arm. Massive. So it's there, writhing around in his bag. And so he gets down, he starts to undo his bag. And then there's like eight other guys that are like, time to bring out the snakes. So they all go get their burlap sacks. So they form this little circle of like eight or nine guys, and they've got their snakes out, and eight of the snakes were charmed. They got them to like, you know, do the whole thing, and they're sitting there in front of them. Dude with the broken finger couldn't charm a snake. It's just going crazy. So you are in this little dark square, and you've got these eight guys, nine guys with their king cobras, and you're just like, you don't know whether if you should run, or, but it was too interesting to run away. You're just like, this is insane. So his snake is going crazy. It's like he's got it by the tail. I don't think that's the way you're supposed to hold the snake. Probably why he lost his finger. He's got it by the tail. It's just going crazy. It's knocking over the charmed snakes. And we're just watching this like, ah! And then all of a sudden that snake whips around and bites this man right between the thumb and the index finger, just right there. And I don't know if you know this about a king cobra. It is the only snake that can kill an elephant. The reason is it can pump so much venom in. Like an elephant's a giant beast. So any other snake bite, they can just take it. But a king cobra has so much venom and can pump in so much venom that it can actually kill an elephant. I've never seen a snake bite a person before this. That king cobra latched onto that webbing and just starts to chew, just ha, ha, and instant blood, just gushing blood. I don't know if their fangs are like razor or what, but it's just, I'm like, ah, I can't believe this is happening. And so this guy gets his thumb and he's just, that snake is so strong. He's wedging his thumb underneath the roof of the mouth of it to try to get his finger in there to finally pry its fangs off. He does. It's just writhing around. He gets it, puts it back in his burlap sack, ties it, blood just gushing, and then he whips out his knife. Yes, I went, is he gonna cut off his hand? He cut off his finger before. Is it like just whack? Well, he didn't. He cut a strip of burlap, takes it, binds it around his hand and ties it. And I'm like, Israel, bro, is this guy dead? Like, what's gonna happen here? So Israel leans over and is like, hey man, what's going on? And they have a conversation. He goes, oh no, it's fine. All of the king cobras were milked of their venom this morning. I went, I should have known that. Why wasn't that the first thing you said to us? Like, hey, no worry about these snakes. They've got no venom, it's okay. So, Solomon. If the serpent bites before it's charmed, it is no advantage to the charmer. Yeah, that's exactly what happened to that dude. A bummer. You better charm that snake before you pull it out and start showing it off. That's what Solomon is saying. Look out. But all these verses right here, verses 8 through 11, it's simply this. Work gets these people. The tree falls, hits them, they fall in their pit, the quarrying of stones get them. It's like work wars against us today. Not the way work was supposed to be. You look at Genesis 2, when God gives Adam his job as a gardener, it was supposed to be this beautiful partnership, shalom, amazing. You plant a seed, you get fruit. But what happens? There's sin. And what happens to the ground that was supposed to be so fertile and so amazing and in cooperation with the human? The ground is cursed. And it's not fruit anymore, it's you're gonna work your tail off. You're gonna sweat, and what's it gonna produce? Thorns and thistles. You're gonna give your life to this thing, and then it says this, and eventually it'll kill you. And one day, you go back into the dust. You'll die. That's what this is saying. The brokenness of work. That this thing that you have to do, you feel like your job is killing you? Yeah, it's probably true. It'll kill you. Then, foolish words. Maybe the worst part of being a fool. The words of a wise man win him favor, but the lips of a fool consume him. The beginning of the words of his mouth is foolishness, verse 13. And the end of his talk is evil madness. A fool multiplies words, though no man knows what it's to be. And who can tell him what will be hereafter? The toil of a fool wearies him, for he does not know the way to the city. Foolish words. How do you know someone that's foolish with their words? Number one, verse 14, they talk too much. Scripture says this, in the multitude of words, there lacks not sin. People that talk a lot end up sinning a lot. Be careful. I wonder if Solomon is thinking about his own predicament. He's got 700 wives. How often did Solomon hear, hey, can we talk, honey? 700 times a day, he's like, I can't take this anymore. There are some people that they talk, it's like amazing. They will talk breathing out and talk breathing in. And you're like, how do I get out of this conversation? Do I need to fake a heart attack? I think someone told me there's an app for the phone that actually you can call yourself. Like, I'm sorry, I gotta go, I gotta take this one. It's from me, really important. Like, there are people that just, they can't stop talking. You're like, Verse 13, they get off on the wrong foot. They just start stupid. They make a bad first impression. And it can affect you. So when I worked at MetOne Instruments, I was always looking for talented people to help. And there was this new guy that got hired, and I had interacted with him a number of times, and I really liked him. Smart, seemed like a hard worker. Like, I wanted to promote him into my, I wanted to take him, essentially, into my division. And I talked to the owner of the company. I'm like, hey, this guy, I think he's good. I'd like to bring him in. He's like, no. And the owner of the company, super smart guy, great guy, love him. I said, why not? He said, here's why. He goes, when he was first hired, I'm walking by the break room. He's in the break room with another guy. And there was a door to the break room. Right as the owner was walking by the door, an employee said to this new guy, hey, working hard? The guy replied, nope, hardly working. Right as Tom walked by and looked at him. That was it. That one stupid, foolish statement of a bad first impression, Tom just said, nope, not promoting him. Be very careful with your words. You don't know who's listening. You don't know, you make a bad first impression, how that might close doors for what could have been. You get off on the wrong foot. And then verse 15, he doesn't know the way to the city. The guy can't find his own way home, but he'll give directions to you. So fools will give directions to people when they're lost. The fool does not know the simple saying, I don't know. A fool always thinks they know more than they actually know, and they'll give directions even when they're lost. Foolish words. And then lastly, the foolish leader. Woe to you, O land, when your king is a child and your princes feast in the morning. Happy are you, O land, when your king is the son of nobility and your princes feast at the proper time, for strength and not for drunkenness. Through sloth, the roof sinks in, and through indolence, the house leaks. Bread is made for laughter, and wine gladdens life, and money answers everything. Even in your thoughts, do not curse the king, nor in your bedroom, curse the rich. For a bird of the air will carry your voice, or some winged creature tell the matter. Have you heard the saying, a little birdie told me? From right here, in Ecclesiastes 10, verse 20. Foolish leaders. What are their DNA? Verse 16, they're immature. Verse 17, they party when they should be planning. I collect like biographies of talented people. I have this one article, it actually went through a bunch of what we would call the best leaders today and just gave their morning routine. And what I noticed about great men is all of them get after it in the morning because the brain is the best when it's had rest. That's every single study has ever shown. You might think you're a night owl. Well, the brain is its best when it's had rest. And I read recently a book by Arthur Brooks. I don't know if you know him. He's a great author. He's a believer in Jesus Christ. But just, I mean, his articles are in the Atlantic everywhere. He's a very, very talented man. And he wrote a book called Strength to Strength. And what it was just, here's what I've learned. He's like 58, 59 years old. He's like, here's what I've learned in life. Here are the things that I do to be successful. It's one of the most brilliant books ever. He just opens his life up and says, here's what I do. He's like, literally gives you his diet. I eat a lot of protein early in the morning because it fuels you for the day. Like, he gets that detailed in this book. Really great book. And he's the guy that says, you get after it in the morning. Bad leaders party when they should be planning. Good leaders plan when they're supposed to be planning. Verse 18, they're lazy. There's a leak in the roof and they ignore it and then it rots everything out and it's done. It's over. Fools do this. They're always looking for the new or the next. They don't steward what they already have. They're always moving on. They're always getting to the next thing. Instead of being like, well, we've been given some stuff. Let's make sure that we're stewarding well what we already have. The roof that we already have, let's sure we make that do well. No, they always want the new. They always want the next. And they're not stewarding the stuff that's actually going to carry them through and make them the money that they need to be able to do the new and the next. They don't steward well. And then verse 19, what is this? Bread is made for laughter and wine gladdens life and money answers everything. It's irony is what it is. Like anyone grab a dinner roll and be like, ha, 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 that's so funny. No, right? Bread isn't made for laughter. It's a signal right in the beginning saying, this is irony. And who believes money answers everything besides the government? Foolish leaders, here's what a foolish leader does. They throw money at problems because it is the easiest. You don't have to plan then. You don't have to get in the nitty gritty. You don't have to evaluate your policy to actually see if it's working. You just keep saying, if we just had more money, it'd work. If we just had another $1 million, if we just had another $100 million, then it would work. Because that's the easiest solution. It's not our policy was bad and this is never gonna solve it. It's no, we just don't have enough money. How often do we hear that about policies? That's what fools do. Instead of backing up and very carefully evaluating how successful is this thing, they don't. And then verse 20. Even in your thoughts, do not curse the king, nor in your bedroom curse the rich. For the bird of the air will carry your voice, or some winged creature tell the matter. What happens with fools is this, they get too big for their britches and they bite the hand that feeds them. Whoever it was, whatever leader of the organization or whatever the people that were helping them, all of a sudden they think they're so big and they start to curse and talk down on them and then it gets back and look out, it hurts them. I always notice this about those kind of people. They seem to outpunt their coverage. They get in too deep, they say things they should and they end up in big trouble by it. They talk trash about leaders. And it comes back. And if you're a leader, people will talk trash about you. It's just gonna come. When people do that to me, here's what I say. Jesus loves me. My wife loves me. My kids love me. Who are you? You don't matter, man. The things that matter most to me are so good. I'm so rich. Are you kidding me? I'm not gonna fight over the pennies that you're talking about right now. Who cares? So this is the fool. And let's back up pretty quickly and try to give some antidotes to this. So number one is when life stinks, what do you do? Verse 4 says this, in the context of that, a little fly in the ointment causes it to stink, foolish. If the anger of the ruler rises against you, do not leave your place, for calmness will lay great offenses to rest. When life stinks, stay calm. If you freak out, bad things can happen. When life stinks, don't freak out. Any horse lovers in here? I'm going to offend you. I had three horses. Had, praise God. So horses have tiny brains. I mean, for the size of them, they have tiny brains. And horses just, they freak out. So we had this horse, and somehow it stepped into this little metal stand, and it freaked out. And the little metal stand kind of got stuck on its leg, and it just started kicking back and forth. And that metal stand, because the inside of it was just a bent metal, it was just like a razor blade that just went back and forth and just hamburgered that horse's leg, because it just freaked out. Don't be like a horse. Calm down. Pray. Talk with people that you love. Get some counsel. And then move forward. That's what you do. Phone a godly friend. When life stinks, when it feels like there's a fly in the ointment, like, uh-oh, what's happening right now? Calm down. Don't march up on stage and slap somebody. Probably not going to work out for you. Calm down. Call godly people. Get counsel. And then move forward. Number two, when work is killing you. I love verse 10. If the iron is blunt and one does not sharpen the edge, he must use more strength, but wisdom helps one to succeed. When it comes to work, sharpen your skills. Keep getting better. If there's something that I do that is causing a mistake, stop, slow down. Rushing through the same mistake over and over and over is what a fool does. Fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me. I need to stop and be like, I want to get better at this. I don't want to keep having this mistake be done over and over and over again. I think there are some people that say they have 20 years of experience, but they don't. They have 1 year of experience that they've repeated 20 times. They haven't sharpened their skill. They haven't got better and better and better at what they're trying to do. So if I have this issue, then I gotta better figure out a system to solve it. If I'm always misplacing my keys and my wallet and my phone, and it's causing me trouble, guess what I should do? Sharpen my skill. Okay, from now on, when I come home or when I get in my car, I'm always gonna place my phone, my wallet, my keys in the same location. You're just always doing that, sharpening your skill, getting better and better at what you do. That's what you're supposed to do. So I'll give you an example of this. What are, in the last 50 years, which company makes the best vehicles on planet Earth? Volkswagen, no doubt about it. No, it's hands down Toyota, right? You just look at any standard whatsoever. Toyota produces the most dependable vehicles. They just do. You can argue all day. The facts just, they just do. It's just that simple. So, why? So in engineering, we study like manufacturing processes. And Toyota has a very interesting philosophy that's unique to probably the Japanese culture as well as what Toyota tried to implement. They have these gigantic assembly lines, and there's tons of factory workers. So they have this thing that's called Kaizen. Kaizen is a philosophy. It's literally this: get better every day. That's what it means. Get sharper every day. So every single assembly worker has the power inside of a Toyota massive, massive assembly to stop the whole thing. Stop now. If they see a problem, a screw that's not quite right, a process that's making a mistake, they have the ability. They say, you are the expert. You have to Kaizen your little area, and you can stop things right now so that we can make it better. That is not in America. America is, we want 5,000 of these things produced today, and we're going to get 5,000 of them produced today. That's not Kaizen in Toyota. It is, we want the process to get better. And if the process gets better, then we'll produce better cars. So people that study it say, it is that philosophy right there that empowered every assembly worker to say, they actually get rewarded if they find a legitimate problem. They find out, they get a reward for that. That Kaizen philosophy has made Toyota produce the best vehicles. It's every day, get sharper. That's what wisdom says. I don't want to keep making this mistake, the same one over and over for the next 20 years. Let's figure it out right now, today. Let's stop this process, find a solution, and I'm going to do a lot better. I'm going to sharpen myself. And then secondly, I think there's an order. My Cobra guy got out of order. He should have charmed the snake before he decided to show off the snake. Probably why he's missing a finger and has a messed up hand right now. There's an order to life. I think it's almost like an IKEA dresser. Ever put together IKEA furniture? There's an order. If you get anything out of order, what do you end up with? Firewood. That's what you end up with. It's junk because every step builds on the next step. Life is like that. There's to be an order to life. Charm the snake before you show it off. Make sure that your life is ordered correctly. Make sure you're taking the necessary steps to get to where you need to be. And that happens, I think, real simply by being humble. Humility gives you that. You're able to say to people, hey, help me here. Hey, I keep making this mistake. Why am I making this mistake? That's what humility does. You listen, you ask for advice, you're curious about why things aren't working out for you. Be humble. The Bible says, humble yourself under the mighty hand of God, and he will lift you up in due season. There's a time of humility where you just say, I want to sharpen my skills and make sure I'm ordered in my job, and that's how you succeed. Your mouth, foolish words. If your mouth gets you in a lot of trouble, what do? James chapter 1, verse 19, you memorize this verse. Know this, my beloved brothers, let every person be quick to hear, slow to speak, slow to anger. You write that on your dashboard. You put it on your phone as your screensaver. I've got two ears, one mouth. I'm going to listen a lot more than I talk. When you don't know direction to a city, you don't act like you know it. You say the wisest words you can ever say. I don't know. Don't act like you know more than you know. I don't know. That's what you do. And then what about bad leaders? I have a simple policy. There are going to be thoughts in your heads to curse the king, in your bedroom to curse your boss, whatever. I have a simple policy. It's Matthew chapter 18, one of the most brilliant passages in the Bible. If you want your relationships to work out well with people, if you want your relationship to work out well in work, you do this right here. If your brother sins against you, go and tell your wife, your husband, your buddies. The first person you talk to is guess who? That person. That'll save you so much damage. It will get back to them. If you'll just do that first line right there, 99% of your issues with people will go away if they're the first person that you go to, not talking to anyone else about it. Go tell him his fault between you and him alone. If he listens to you, you have gained your brother. But if he does not listen, take one or two others along with you, that every charge may be established by the evidence of two or three witnesses. If he refuses to listen to them, tell it to the church. And if he refuses to listen even to the church, let him be to you as a Gentile and a tax collector. First step, not speaking about the person, not getting mad at them, not talking to other people about them, you are the person. Everyone should have this policy. I don't talk about the man until I've talked to the man. Just that's step one. And then you might have to bring somebody else, and then you might have to bring him to the church. But most of the time, if you just do step one, if you're not cursing them in your bedroom and cursing them to people that you know, if you just do step one, you won't have problems with people. The fool doesn't do that. Fool goes and just pollutes the water all around, and then it comes back to the person. He's like, what is he saying about me? And then it's gigantic problems that divide and destroy what God wants. But here's the best advice I've ever heard. I'm not made a fool. It came from Dallas Willard. And it's one of the prayers I say just about every single morning. And if you don't know who Dallas Willard was, he passed away a couple years ago. He was a philosopher at the University of Southern California, considered to be one of the greatest philosophers of the 20th century. Believer in Jesus Christ. And he gave a series of lectures that I listened to 20 years ago. And he said this, guy was asking him. It was down in Silicon Valley, very important people, talking about work. And this guy said this to these guys that are building venture capitalists and billions of dollars. He said this, he said, invite Jesus into your day every morning. He is the smartest person in your field. That's been one of my go-tos. Jesus, come with me today. Jesus, guard my mouth today. Jesus, help me from being a fool today. Jesus, let my heart and my ear be tuned into your heart and to your spirit so that today I carry myself in a way that looks and demonstrates that I'm a believer in you, that I'm underneath your rule and your kingdom. Make that your policy. Jesus, come with me today. Keep me from being a fool, because any one of us can be. That's why we end every service with communion. We're reminding ourselves Jesus is the source. He is the bread of life. He is the water that satiates us. It's Jesus.